laptops, thumb drives, and a wall charger. A sure sign that our nerd is here again. Bringing you news and knowledge from the world of computers and technology, here's Benjamin Rockwell with Computer Talk Radio.
We've got a ton in store for you here on this week's Computer Talk Radio. Number of listener questions. Alex asks, my digital world is overwhelming. How do I reduce the clutter? Jason asks, should I be concerned about China and their use of spying technology? Taylor asks, I can use tech. Does that make me digitally literate? Amy asks, what role will AI play in future computing? Marty, on his segment, he's going to talk about the difference between daylight saving time and meetings. Keith M. Sedor, he's continuing a series in regards to the backup series. It's the differences between laptop and desktop backups. Steve Keske, are any systems absolutely safe out there? Even the government systems? On the scam series, there's a new variant on a CAPTCHA scam. I covered it recently, but they've evolved it already. And then on the IT Pro series, I've got the first of four that are going to be rebutting common statements about why return to work is so important. If you miss any of these, of course, you can reach out to us at computertalkradio.com. Scroll down to where it says listen here, and that will take you to our podcast. Of course, you can also contact me at computertalkradio.com and ask me your computer questions, your technology concerns, or if you'd like the more personal touch, call 888-NERD-888. That's 888-6373-888. If I'm free, I'll answer the phone. If I'm not, leave a message. That's okay. I will get back with you. Let's dive into the news from this past week. And Microsoft is going on a diet, slashing some of the long-term things that they figure are redundant. So last week, we talked about this on the news. They are getting rid of Skype, and they're moving us all to Teams. Okay, I understand that. They are two nearly competing platforms. As a matter of fact, a previous company that I worked with, I was there when they made the transition from Skype over to Teams, and I much preferred Teams. This week, remote desktop is being abandoned in favor of something called Windows App. And look, I didn't name this, but that is apparently a new remote desktop app. Okay, whatever. Anyways, there's also another one, Publisher. And wow, they're telling us all to leave this behind? Now, instead, they think we should just make do. We should just use Word or PowerPoint or Designer, the last of which is part of their Copilot AI software. So you go there and you can tell it what you want it to make, and it'll, you know, put pictures there and all of that. And look, there's a whole list of substitution suggestions, but none are truly a better take on the flexibility of the original desktop publishing app called Publisher. It's been around for a long time, and it was designed to replace some of the competitors that were around in the early 90s. So, look, I am going to lament the loss of this app, as it was a great all-around app for anyone who wanted to dabble in that field, the desktop publishing field. And it covered so many different things, from business cards to banners. And you could do any kinds of different print material with it. It was just beautiful. And it's going to be gone very soon. Now, speaking of a Microsoft app, there are tools for various things. You can use big hammers. You can use small hammers. Obviously, the bigger the job, the bigger the hammer. You get something like concrete. You want to use a sledgehammer. If you're putting up pictures on the wall, you're going to use just a small light hammer to put the nails in. Excel is a tool. And we can utilize this tool to run our personal finances on. I do some of that myself. You might be running a small business, a very small business, and maybe that would be okay. Or maybe crunching some numbers in a department. Health New Zealand during a review by Deloitte auditors. Deloitte is a big, huge accounting firm and auditing firm. So you've probably already figured out where I'm going. They were balancing their books, not using a major accounting package, but Excel. How big are their books? Just take a guess. It's a bigger number than you think. It's more than a million. It's more than 100 million. It's more than a billion. Look, I'll just say it. It's $28 billion in a spreadsheet. This is insane. This is after a few years of serious accounting errors. Go figure. Tracking issues. What? And so much more. This is insane. It was also reported that they have 6,000 different applications and 100 different digital networks, and yet they don't have a major accounting package. They're using Excel. I can't even imagine. Who thought this was a good idea? This is madness. At South by Southwest, Mark Cuban also noted something about tools. His approach was very clear. It was simple. It's as it should be about all of technology. His statement at one point was, quote, AI is never the answer. AI is the tool. Whatever skills you have, you can use AI to amplify them. That's the end of the quote there. This is something very key for all of us to be remembering along the way as we move through these different technologies. This similar approach has been given over the ages on many different types and many different stages of technology. Moving to the current, I have leveraged AI for a number of things, but I don't treat AI as a solution to all of my concerns in life. It's just a small little thing I use as a tool once in a while. The tech-avoiding communities, like the Amish, could perhaps use more technology than they do, but they will never treat it as more than a tool for very specific purposes that they feel are good and biblical. We could learn from them. Even if we don't adopt all of their ways, we should be thinking in the same manner of, is this something that is good to be used for this purpose? Now imagine being there. You're playing chess and your opponent starts cheating. This isn't an ordinary opponent, but one that has memorized every single rule and can play a flawless game. The latest is that artificial intelligence is doing exactly that, cheating at chess. Now, older versions of AI would need to be encouraged to cheat. But the disturbing thing that came out of this study is that more recent versions like DeepSeek and the latest of ChatGPT and so forth, well, they're taking it upon themselves to do exactly that, to cheat by default. This shows an underlying concern with artificial intelligence that appears to be slightly forgetful, misguided, or doddering to some kind of odd behavior that's hard to understand. So if they play fast and loose with a game of chess, especially as they get better, what are they doing now? What will they do when more important things are happening with AI that we rely on? This is scary. So I do love watching movies with the subtitles on, and I've grown quite adept at the experience. Another level is coming where not only the titles, but even the spoken language, the dubbing, can be done by AI. Now, on Amazon, they've announced that they are testing this very idea for Prime Video, which will still be monitored by humans to ensure the proper outcomes of the voice that's going on and all of that. And that means that we are moving into a place where better movies from other countries, other cultures, other languages could soon be coming to our screens. Sure, this does mean replacing voiceover artists, but it could lead to more seamless viewing experiences. It will also likely lead to an increase in people who really know how to use AI and work with it to improve the outcome. Last up, Verizon runs constant stats on all of their customers, like any good business. One of the recent discoveries released within their quarterly report this week was that customers are holding on to their phones for longer. I'd been thinking it was a couple of years, maybe a little bit longer. And that's a lot of what we've been told. We've been pushed by the manufacturers. Apparently, it's far longer. And it is an overall concern for the manufacturers as well. It seems that the average upgrade cycle at Verizon, who is actually growing very nicely, is at 42 months now. That's 3.5 years between your Galaxy phone, your iPhone, or whatever it is that you've got in your pocket. I feel that this can be attributed clearly to a lack of features that customers need or want, again, by the manufacturers. I'm laying this at their feet. Coming up next, Alex, my digital world is overwhelming. How do I reduce the clutter? Here on Computer Talk Radio.
Let's talk about on and off.
You mean like light switches?
Yeah, the original user interface device.
And you were there, right?
Hey, I'm not that old.
Yeah, you are. So on and off.
Yeah, only with no humans doing it, like...
But you and I both have our computers on CyberPower UPS systems.
Yeah, so we have power, but there's another on and off.
Oh, right. Online and offline.
You got it. Meaning another UPS at the cable modem and VoIP phone and Wi-Fi router.
And even a low-cost standby UPS can handle those. Better, of course, if it has AVR.
Right, so it doesn't have to hit the battery just because the line voltage drops.
Maybe it's a good time to mention the promo that saves $10 to $15. Details are at the CyberPower website.
And maybe you could put it on your website?
Oh, that's already done at ComputerTalkRadio.com.
You know, on and off. You take really good care of your listeners.
Alex reached out to me here at Computer Talk Radio, the website, ComputerTalkRadio.com, ComputerTalkRadio.com. Alex's question, my digital world is overwhelming me. Too many devices, old accounts, and endless files. How can I revamp my tech clutter and simplify? And to that, I'm going to say you're probably asking the wrong person. No, I'm kidding. Actually, I have had to do this all the way along. I have so many different tech items across the years where I have to go through and at different points in time, I have to go and plan for a declutter. And it's important that I do. Otherwise, yes, I would have rooms and rooms full of tech. I already have a lot of technology, but I would have far more than I do now. You need to start off. You need to really think of your tech like a closet. Over the years, you've stuffed it full of everything that's under the tech world, whether it's gadgets, apps, accounts, files, whatever it is. And I will tell you, there are times where I make purchasing decisions because I already look ahead and I go, I'm not going to use that for any great length of time. It's fascinating. It's cool. The MetaQuest and the Vision Pro, that's a perfect example where I've grown to the point where I go, I'm not going to be really enthralled with that long enough for it to really pay for itself. So you have to plan like that, but we're all bad at planning like this. So just like that overstuffed closet makes it harder to find what you actually want to wear, digital clutter definitely can slow us all down. It can waste space and some of these pose security risks. So you need to go through and you need to do this, and depending on who you are and what you have, you need to make sure that you're doing a good self audit. You need to be decluttering, organizing, regaining control over your tech. You have to be moving away from being that tech hoarder, that digital hoarder. And I know people that are like that. I know that there are people out there. They have every email that anybody has sent to them within the last 20 years. And they're never going to look at it. They're never going to go back to that. But I've got it on hand just in case. All right. So first off, start with the hardware. Start with all of those devices. You need to be thinking about every laptop, phone, tablet, hard drive, peripheral, whatever it is that you've got. You need to think about all of those. Note them down. Next up, you're going to recycle or donate anything that you no longer use. Part of that, it does involve securely wiping any storage, any of those hard drives, the flash drives, whatever it is, before you chuck them. And this is a harder one, but it's definitely one that you need to be thinking about. You need to be thinking about consolidation as well. So if you've got multiple smartphones, bring all of that onto one smartphone. If you have one phone line, you need one smartphone. The rest of them, okay, maybe keep the oldest one on hand, or not oldest, the most recent one on hand. And you can use that as your backup in case, you know, like if you've got two iPhones, you've got like an iPhone 15 and an iPhone 13. You keep the 13, you use the 15. The 13 is just in case you absolutely destroy that 15 somehow. You run it over with the BMW or something, whatever it is. But everything else, all the rest of them, get rid of them. If you've got a family of three or four, you might keep one of those extra smartphones. You don't need to keep an extra smartphone for each of those people. Again, this is all about going through each of the devices, and you're going through and making sure that you only have what you need. Next up, you're going to look through your different systems. If you've got multiple systems, you need to declutter all of the apps, all of the software, all of the different pieces of data. So you go through your phone, you go through your computer, and you uninstall any apps that you do not use. You're going to check for duplicate apps. You don't need five different pieces of software for editing photos. Take the best one you've got and work with that. That's the kind of idea that I'm looking for here. So you want to simplify every chance that you can. Next up, make sure you're turning off any of those subscriptions, especially if they, any of those subscriptions that no longer add value. You've got, again, like I just mentioned, you've got five different photo editing apps, probably two of them, three of them have subscriptions. Kill off the subscription. You're decluttering your wallet that way. So next up, go through your online accounts. You need to make a list of all of your email addresses, especially the ones you don't use anymore. And those ones that you don't use anymore, you need to delete them or deactivate them. You need to be doing something to make sure that they're no longer available, no longer around. I would suggest that if you do decide you're going to keep them, make sure you're going to update your password. And I'm talking put in a 20-character password. Make sure there's numbers, letters, special characters in there. We're trying to proof this, hacker-proof this, rather, trying to make sure that you're protected. Next up, if you are in the world of two-factor authentication, if you're comfortable with it, I do want you to use 2FA or MFA, multi-factor authentication. And you should be using this on all of your accounts. And again, removing any access for anything that you're not using any longer. Next up, your digital storage, all of your cloud storage, your hard drives. You need to delete or at least archive any old files, especially if they're not necessary. You also need to organize all of your important files into very clear labeled folders to make them easy to find. And when I talk about this, when I'm talking about folders, I want you to think about really deep hierarchies of folders. So you've got one folder for home and one folder for work. Under home, you start talking about one folder for budget and another folder for hobbies and another one for family. And then you start sorting underneath that. Let's just take the family one. So you're going to do family records. You're going to do things like pictures and things like that. You're going to make at each level as few folders as you can. So you have to dig deep through that. The computer allows for searching these days, so you can search for files that you're having a hard time finding. But if you organize them right now, you won't even have to worry about this. You need to organize this very carefully. Next up, go through, empty out your downloads folders, your desktop, all of the files that are there. You need to be really moving through all of this data and thinking about, do I really need this anymore? Last up, I want you to streamline all of your notifications, all of your emails, all of your settings, all of your everything. We need, and this is a general rule for everybody, we should all be doing this, because I'll tell you, in any given day, some people have so many different notifications. You know, I've gone to meals with people, and throughout the meal, they've had a dozen notifications come in. Not actual text messages, not actual emails, but just various notifications. And I've had to sit with them and go, you're getting bombarded. You're getting distracted. It's an overload on our senses. And we should be taking every effort, every chance we get, to reduce all of those different disruptors in our life so that we can enjoy the rest of our life. So declutter your email inbox, unsubscribe from the newsletters that you don't really look at anymore. Go through and get rid of anything that's really junk. You want to move that on out. And you want to organize all of your home screens to keep only the essentials within reach. Look, I know it's like cleaning out a closet or even a junk drawer, and you don't realize how much unnecessary stuff you've been holding on to until you finally clear it out. By simplifying, you're not only going to make your digital life more efficient, but also reduce those distractions and the security risks. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Micro Center, home to all kinds of electronics and computer items, has over 20 locations across the country, and it's also available at microcenter.com. This is Benjamin Rockwell of Computer Talk Radio, and I live just a couple of miles away from my local Micro Center, and I've been shopping there for years. From Apple to Windows, they've got what you need. CPUs, got them. Screwdrivers and other tools, yep. Cables, televisions, scanners, projectors, cameras, they have it all. Micro Center is a place which fills your electronic needs. What are you looking for? Media centers, monitors, mice, MP3 players, media, modems, motherboards, memory? Those are just the M's. They aren't regional, but spread across our great land from Virginia to California. Each one is service and repair, in-store clinics, and business services, too. MicroCenter.com is their online store, a place where you can get your regular online ordering needs met. From the hobbyist to the professional, the brand name, or building it yourself, MicroCenter is your resource. Check out MicroCenter.com today. MicroCenter.com.
Phone number 888-NERD-888. That's 888-637-3888. We're in the middle of an occasional series. We're sprinkling these here and there. And it's all about time machine. Well, it's more of backups. And backups in general, but mostly revolving around the Mac side. Keith Amsidor joins me now on this. And Keith, you've mentioned offline that there are some differences between the laptops and the desktops and all the way across. Give me an idea of what that's all about, if you would.
Absolutely, Benjamin. There are basically, again, it's a two-pronged approach between whether you're backing up a Mac with Time Machine if it's a laptop, okay, and if you're backing up a Mac with Time Machine and it's a desktop. If you have a desktop, it's very simple. You only need to have a mountable, removable volume connected to your Mac, in this case, an external hard drive, that is the size of the, not even the size of the internal drive, just the size of the amount of data you have total on your drive.
Yeah.
Although I generally recommend for long-term usage, if you have a 500 gigabyte drive, you should have a 1 terabyte backup drive. If you have a 1 terabyte hard drive, you should have a 2 terabyte backup drive.
Actually, at the price that they are today, plan for the size of the next computer, your next Mac or PC, and size accordingly for that. Just because a hard drive expenses is way lower. If you've got a half terabyte today, go for that 4 terabyte drive.
That's
for backups. Because, yeah.
You mean the differences in price on drives ranging between 1 and say 6 terabytes.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's literally like in between like $80 and $160. You know, so if it's just a matter of $10, $20, $30 to $40 more and it's within your budget, go for it.
Yeah.
But let's take a trip with me back in time, Benjamin. Let's go back to the second decade of the 21st century when we're in the 2010 to 2020 range, sure. the earlier part of that. And Time Machine and Time Capsule is all the rage for Mac users. Time Capsule was not actually a requirement for desktop Mac users. So if you were using an iMac or a Mac Mini or a Power Mac Tower, you only needed to connect an external hard drive that was dedicated to your backup. Mm-hmm. And I say dedicated to because when you would plug in a drive to your Mac, a message would pop up on the screen says, hey, we've detected that you've plugged in a new hard drive. Do you want to use it for Time Machine backup?
Okay.
And Time Machine would take that drive, partition it properly, configure and format it to be a Time Machine volume, and then dedicate it to just that purpose. So you weren't going to be using it for just random file storage.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But the nice thing about plugging in an external hard drive to a desktop Mac was it was like that Ronco turkey oven. It was set it and forget it.
Oh, man.
Literally, you set it up one time.
Takes me back in time to infomercials from what? When was that? The late 80s? Early
90s? Ron Popeil.
Yeah.
Ronco turkey oven, set it and forget it. And then there'd be a little disclaimer at the bottom of the screen. Don't really just set it and forget it. You know, it's a hot item and you need to watch it.
Yeah.
But unlike that, it didn't actually require watching because as long as you left the machine on, and even if you let it go to sleep, you could set the settings that if Time Machine was going to be invoked, that it would wake the machine for the Time Machine backup.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then it would complete the backup and then go about its business. And as long as you had room on that external drive, you never had to worry about connecting it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, conversely, if you owned a Mac laptop, a MacBook, a MacBook Pro, or an iBook, you would not walk around with an external hard drive, even a smaller drive that's the size of a deck of cards, tethered to your computer at all times, like it's some kind of dongle, because that would be very unwieldy to do. So the only option would be to remember to plug it in periodically, and that would become tiresome, laborious, and all of a sudden, the next thing you know, it's not really rote, it's not part of your routine, and you're forgetting backups, you're missing backups. Next thing you know, Time Machine's flashing messages on your screen warning you, hey, your machine hasn't been backed up in 10 days, 2 weeks, 2 months, and so on. Enter Time Machine with Time Capsule. Now, if you are at home or even at the office and it's where your Mac laptop lives regularly, you can have Time Machine find the drive on the Time Capsule as its regular primary destination, and it will find, mount, complete a backup, and then dismount without you having to do anything. And Time Capsule then gave Mac laptop users the set it and forget it option as well. And it was an absolute delight. Because I'll tell you, Benjamin, I know you said to me offline, you know, about some other, you know, well-known brands of wireless routers. And it was never that there was anything wrong with those routers. On Windows PCs, they performed admirably. And even though network topologies are supposed to be theoretically, you know, in a laboratory world, platform agnostic, meaning it doesn't matter whether you've got a Mac, PC, or whatever, it's just supposed to work. In my actual day-to-day practice, this is like almost 30 years worth, I have discovered that Apple products play better with other Apple products. And I have had much more success back in the 2008 to, say, 2015 timeframe with those Apple wireless devices, especially those that I was relying on a Mac backup for, to do what they were supposed to do the way they were intended to do it.
Some interesting stuff, and that sets us up for the next installment, which we'll have in the next week or two or so. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell.
And I'm Keith M. Seador.
You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Hi, this is Benjamin Rockwell. Most of us use digital cameras nowadays, but what do we do with those old pictures and slides in the back of the closet? Well, let me tell you about Legacy Digital Productions. They specialize in taking your old memories on film, videotape, and slides and digitizing them to DVDs. If you have boxes of old slides, then you know they fade more and more each year. Let Legacy Digital scan them for you and stop the aging process dead in its tracks. You'll get beautiful 10-megapixel digital files, color-corrected and ready for printing. All this is done faster and cheaper than buying a film scanner and doing it yourself. Your files are then burned onto gold archival DVD discs where they will last for generations. Call right now, mention my name, Benjamin Rockwell, and receive a 30% discount on your order. Call toll-free 1-866-2-LEGACY. That's 1-866-2-LEGACY. And tell them Benjamin sent you. Your memories are priceless, so call 866-2-LEGACY now.
The website, ComputerTalkRadio.com, ComputerTalkRadio.com. That's how you can reach out to us. Just scroll down to where it says contact us today, and we will get back to you with answers to your computer questions and your technology concerns. Marty Winston joins me now. And Marty, what do you have for us this week?
Well, you know how eventually I tend to come up with a whole bunch of riddles or funny sayings, some of which may sometimes be a little bit funny.
Sure. Okay. Sometimes very funny.
Well, thank you. Do you know what the difference is between daylight saving time and online meetings?
What is the difference between daylight saving time and meetings?
Well, with daylight saving time, every time you lose an hour, you get it back 6 months later.
I've been in way too many meetings to get that one. Oh, man. Oh, so many times I've been in meetings where I'm like, can I get a refund on that?
Oh, yeah. I have been digging into a lot of research about meetings and looking at their consequences.
Yeah.
Microsoft had a report out last year that said businesses every year are losing, and they're losing, get into how they're losing it, $111 billion a year because of online meetings.
Wow. And I imagine that's actually also, I mean, that's just online meetings, but we've got the same kind of thing with in-person meetings. It's not a...
To a lesser extent these days.
Yeah, well, yes, but it's meetings overall, I would propose. That's just an easily quantifiable number because
I will take issue with that.
Yeah, okay.
When you're in meetings, how many time zones do the meetings cross?
All of them? It all depends.
I'm in meetings with Taiwan, with Switzerland, with England.
Yeah, yeah.
And there is no time of day I get to sleep.
Yeah, yeah, I can definitely understand that.
So, you know, and then look at me, everybody, look at my face. Do I look like I'm 28 years old? No, huh?
Okay. Yeah, no comment.
Here's some of what my research shows.
Yeah.
And it's not really so much what is the problem with meetings.
Mm-hmm.
It's more what is the problems that meetings are causing, because there are a lot of problems beyond the meetings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, one of the challenges is that meetings are back to back.
Yes.
You have no escape.
Mm-hmm.
They're not always relevant to you. And by the way, that $111 billion was due to people who were compelled to be in meetings where they and the meeting were absolutely irrelevant to each other.
Sure. Yes.
That's not free, folks. That's payroll.
Yeah. So, you know, there are the saying goes, this is a meeting that should have been an email. And I have been across my career. I've been in many of those where, okay, give me the email, give me the highlights. You know, I'll drill down on the things that impact me.
Send me a PDF. I'll read it.
Sure. Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, meetings, you've got fatigue.
Mm-hmm.
You've got distraction. You've got people trying to get their normal work done because there's no daytime left for them to do their normal work.
Sure.
You've got whole organizations where the meeting focus gives them no lone brain time, so creativity is out the window.
Sure, sure.
And what meeting doesn't allow everybody to participate, even when they're absolutely incompetent dullards on a given subject?
Oh, yeah. Well, yes. And meetings have been set up in some companies. I've been at meetings where the presentation skills were subpar.
Oh, indeed.
You know,
well, there are three layers to meetings, and it's in doing the homework I'm doing, the research, there is the participant,
mm-hmm.
and fatigue and alienation and, mm-hmm. and all of that, and the lack of competitiveness and the fear of failure. That's all part of it for the participant. There's the person who calls the meeting,
mm-hmm.
and they feel like they're in a spotlight. Do they show control? Do they show mentoring? What do they show?
Mm-hmm.
There's the organization sponsoring meetings, and none of the three. Not one of the three categories sets standards.
Yeah, yeah, very true.
An organization could easily say 20-minute limit, mm-hmm. no more 30-minute meetings.
Sure, sure.
And you're not allowed to have three an hour. They have to start straight up and they have to start straight down, and then people get a 10-minute break.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, that might cause occasional, plumbing challenges.
Okay. Yes. Yes.
It's busy every half hour, but that's okay. Now, there's no standard comp time when you've got to spend an hour overnight in meetings.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There's no consideration of work life
mm-hmm,
balance.
Mm-hmm.
So you're looking at health impacts. You're looking at company insurance rates going up. Gig workers having to pull it out of pocket.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Meetings are not the problem as much as the broader picture, which is the challenges beyond just the problems within meetings.
Mm-hmm.
Really, it's the problems that meetings cause. Let's get to the cause and fix it.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. There's a lot to this, and it's going to take some kind of a sea change. It's going to come from something innovative coming along. It's going to really drive this, and I'm hoping that someday soon we see something that will make meetings better.
I'm kind of hoping it's this summer.
Yeah, the sooner the better. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. That's Marty Winston. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. Years ago, I found a web hosting company that fit my needs as a computer nerd, as a radio show host, and just a normal person. Recently, though, it was clear to me that it was time to upgrade, but I had a choice between my old plan and the new one at 7 times the cost. It was that awkward point where I could choose between a sip of water or being dunked in a pool. I searched around, comparing the many options for someone like me.
After searching around for 3 weeks, there it was, SiteGround. In proper fashion, I tested their customer service, their knowledge, and their willingness to do things the right way. The SiteGround salesman made sure that I didn't overbuy and get a 50-gallon bucket when a 32-ounce soda would do. These guys know WordPress, Joomla, and regular standard websites. These guys at SiteGround are awesome. SiteGround.com. Site, S-I-T-E, ground.com.
The bad guys are out to get us. They're out to get you, me, and everybody they can. And they keep coming up with new tricks. Even new tricks based off of the previous tricks that I've talked about. Even recently, we're seeing an evolution in the ways that they're trying to scam us. And they are going to look for more ways in the future. But this one, so I talked about it just recently. A matter of where you would be presented with a CAPTCHA, and that is that whole idea of them proving, the website proving that you are a human. And they would present this, but then give you instructions to basically write the information in. You would fill in the information in the Windows Run command. How do we get to the Windows Run command? Well, it's Windows R. And I'm going to key on to that for the thing you want to avoid at any point in time. If you don't understand what is going on whenever you're filling out a CAPTCHA, you probably are getting scammed. Most CAPTCHAs rely on very easy things to do. This one's actually going to be very easy to do, and I'm going to tell you what the full one is here in a moment. But they look for you to just click a box. They look for you to identify the bicycles in a number of pictures. Click on the sections of this picture where there is a car. Things like that. This one is an extension on the previous one where you would previously go and you'd hit Windows R and then you would type in some weird letters that you wouldn't understand and you would just type this in. Just follow our instructions. Just trust us. Well, they found a new way and they want you to hit Windows R, which is the run command, and then hit Control V and then hit Enter. Now, when you hit Control V, and that's what the Windows are, I already covered that, starts up the run command. The Control V is the paste. And when you hit paste, it just shows up. It looks like it's saying some basic script of, I am not a robot. Recaptcha verification ID, and then some random numbers and letters, something like that. But what you don't see is that it's a much longer line, and that longer line includes even more information. The information in the ones that were found by Malwarebytes include some instructions to go on out, download a certain file from a web server, and then that's where they start to get you. And yes, they're going to start using that tool to find your personal information, send it off to a remote location, or maybe even just run a piece of malware that's going to deliver ransomware. However you look at it, it's bad. You don't want to do this. Anytime somebody has you hitting Windows R or the run command, it's likely to end up bad. If you don't know who they are, it's really that red flag. Look, I want us to trust everything that we can, but there are certain things that maybe we start stretching outside of the bounds of reasonability, and we need to be very careful, very cautious all the way along. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio.
Let me tell you about The Radio Factory, an exciting new venue for talk radio. It's the internet, the wave of the present. My name is Benjamin Rockwell, and I'm the host of a syndicated radio program, Computer Talk Radio. So I know the internet is here and now. Many of the hosts at theradiofactory.com have their own podcasts or radio shows across the country, but many people like the comfort of listening to their own special radio show at a specific time and day, much like we watch live television. The internet, as you're probably aware, is a powerful tool that allows the Radio Factory to deliver unique programming with far more variety than the windbags who are simply about contriving up viewpoints to get you riled up. Additionally, you'll find that many of the programs are shorter, giving more information in less time. Stick with theradiofactory.com and see how it evolves to keep you entertained, interested, informed, and above all, intelligent. After all, the Radio Factory motto is building your intelligence one talk show at a time. Theradiofactory.com.
Before you shoot your computer, give Benjamin Rockwell a call. Keeping your technology running smoothly, here's Benjamin Rockwell with Computer Talk Radio.
We are halfway through this week's Computer Talk Radio. The website, computertalkradio.com, computertalkradio.com. The phone number, 888-NERD. 888. That's 888-637-3888. We are radio's broadest look at computers, technology, and how they impact you, me, and all of our lives. And for that reason, we encourage you to ask us questions. We will get back with you, whether you phone us and you leave a voicemail. Maybe I'll answer it. Or, of course, reach out to me again at computertalkradio.com, and I will respond. Steve Kesky joins me now. And Steve, what do you have for us this week?
Well, I'm in a quandary. Are our cyber networks in companies and government, are they really safe?
In what regard?
Oh, you know, can any of them be hacked?
Okay.
Is our data really secure, or is it?
You want the easy answer?
Yeah.
Are any of them safe? are any of these platforms fully safe? Are any of these platforms, whether we're talking the United States government, the IRS, Facebook, Amazon, are these locations all 100% safe from hackers? The answer is none of them are. It is the only true way to ensure that your computer is safe is to power it off. That's the real big thing. And even then, you have to have it powered off, and it has to be physically isolated so nobody can get to it. There are isolated networks within various organizations, and that is still only one layer of protection, because we still have people coming in. We still have persons who are operating systems. I'll take you back. You may recall, and this goes back to, I'm doing this from memory, back in about 2005, 6, 7, maybe earlier by a year or two. No, I know where I was working at that point in time. It was actually probably around 2002, 2003. Mm-hmm. What happened was a piece of malware was written, and this malware would propagate everywhere, and it would move throughout all of the entire internet. And its true goal, the payload, was a very specific, very isolated, very hyper-focused payload. It was looking to transfer itself onto floppy disks and onto flash drives with the intent of infecting a certain set of computers that ran the centrifuges for Iran's Iran's Iraq's, I can't remember which, their nuclear program.
Iran.
Yeah. You remember that. I mean, it's like we go back to, you think about all the effort that had to go into writing this program that would go on through and travel everywhere, all with the intent of getting to those one specific computers, which are physically isolated.
Yeah.
They are the only way to actually get the malware onto them to cause those centrifuges to break down was to introduce it via the floppy drive or a flash drive.
That's right.
And so that underscores just how big of an issue this is. And this can go in all kinds of different directions. It doesn't matter whether we're talking about foreign espionage or hackers or whatever.
Right.
There are people who are who intentionally gone out. There are hackers that have gone on out and vied for positions at major corporations with the intent of getting the data from those companies.
That's true.
I mean, I'm painting it with a very broad brush. Yeah. Yeah. But we can imagine what would happen had somebody intentionally worked on doing all of the background to learn all of the hacking stuff and then found their way into working for the Internal Revenue Service. Or one of the major major banks out there, or you've got the idea.
Yeah,
they're targeting that. They've got a specific thing in mind, and we've seen this time and time again where people have gone forward and they've tried to do this.
Right, and one of the things in this same venue.
Yeah,
as you know, I spent time in the military.
Yes,
and I went into military hospitals. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying, hey, can I get this downloaded? And they said, no. Mm-hmm. Even if I give you, no, we cannot connect anything like a flash drive or a floppy or even a CD into our system.
Yeah. They work so hard to isolate a lot of those things in the medical field. And I would say that the field of medicine is probably one of the more advanced ones as far as outside of military.
Well,
and yet we have, I would say last year, I think I heard of probably, at least one hospital slash medical group slash, you know, big name get a ransomware attack last year. Mm-hmm. And we don't even really talk about them anymore because it's like, okay, here's another one that has a ransomware. Oh, here's another one. Here's another one. Yeah. And as hard as they work, they're still getting these infections.
Yeah, and with the military, you know, you can't do this and you can't do, and you're saying, okay, and yet my doctor, when I was in the military, no matter where I went in the world, in the United States, I walk into any other medical facility ran by the military, and they had instant access to my medical records.
Sure.
You know, so on one hand, it's there. But on the other hand, it's not there.
Yeah.
The encryption and all that was so high. They just, you know, it just was weird. But
yeah.
I can understand where, you know, my medical records were just really out there. And even to this day, nobody can get a hold of them unless I tell them they can release them.
Yeah.
And yet, my personnel records are, well, a little bit easier to access.
Yeah.
Because the National Archives keeps track of all of that.
Sure.
I can.
Well, I mean, so in your case, it was all connected via military networks.
Yeah.
And there was a certain level of ability for them to share that information in what they believe is a more secure location than, let's say, the civilian medical records and so forth. I still think when you consider the amount of people that are in the military that have access to these systems and so forth, I would venture to say that there is still, even with all of the background checks and all of the different things they've got going on, it's still an area where something bad can happen and will.
And does.
And does, yes. Are we ever going to do any? Are we ever going to get anywhere where something is bulletproof, if you will, that nobody's going to be able to hack into?
No,
probably not. I don't see how. As long as we have humans around, we're going to have people who can be corrupted. We're going to have people who are curious. We're going to have systems where people have made mistakes along the way.
Yeah, well.
And there are going to be, I mean, it's just a big, huge, I don't know how to describe it. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah, well, you know, as a programmer.
Yeah.
I've always realized that programming and the higher the language is, in the hierarchy, the more holes are in the program, and therefore it's more hackable. The only
very true
way to program a computer, which I have done, and not have any holes, is to do it in binary.
Yeah, there you go. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. That's Steve Keske. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. You have a couple of those new carbon open frame racks from CyberPower, right?
Yeah, I love them. I configured a 25U to 40 inches deep, about twice as deep as a regular rack, and put more than a dozen peripherals in it.
You know, I saw your article about it. I can't believe it's not clutter.
And my 45U carbon rack, that's also 40 inches deep, will hold a ton of networking and control systems, the network video recorder.
Holy screwdriver, rack man!
You're getting one of their gorgeous enclosed racks soon.
Oh yeah, the 24U. Bigger than their wall mount carbon racks, but smaller than their tall boy.
Did you see what's happening with carbon on the CyberPower website?
Oh yeah, the promo, 10% off all their racks and rack accessories through the end of September. I put a link up at ComputerTalkRadio.com. ComputerTalkRadio.com. Taylor had a question in regards to digital literacy. I'll talk about that here in just a moment. Taylor reached out to me. She reached out to me at 888-NERD-888. That's 888-637-3888. So Taylor reached out to me, and the discussion went along the lines of how she used a smartphone, and she could send emails and browse the web and all of that. And she asked, doesn't that make me digitally literate? And I had to break the news to her. There's a lot more to digital literacy. There's a lot more to all of this big, huge idea of being able to deal with computers and technology. And I can best equate this to the idea of driving. Just because you know how to operate a car, you can start the engine, you can press the gas, you can put it in drive, you can steer it, it doesn't mean that you understand traffic laws. You don't understand car maintenance. It doesn't mean that you can handle emergencies. It doesn't mean you can go on out and you can compete in the Indy 500. Similarly, using technology isn't the same as understanding it. There's a gap there that leaves a lot of people vulnerable to manipulation, to security threats, and really becoming dependent on technology. And that digital dependence is a very tricky thing in itself. Knowing how to use tech does not mean that you understand how it works. Most people these days can navigate applications. They can browse the websites. They can do emails and messaging and all of that. And they can touch on a number of different tech items. But all of that is just surface level literacy. True digital literacy means you understand the data flows, you understand security risks, you understand the mechanics behind the software that you use on a daily basis. It doesn't mean that you have to know the code, but you have to understand all of the different pieces that are fitting into each other. One of the things that people don't realize is how much data that they're giving away just by using free services. And privacy and security awareness is really, it's at a low. And you know what? I'm saying it's at a low. It's always been low. People reuse the same passwords. They rely on weak authentication. They have big companies that are just asking for data, and we give them blind trust. And this blind trust in these different companies expose everyone to breaches and tracking and knowledge about all of who we are. True literacy is recognizing the risks. It's using encryption. It is questioning why any service is free in the first place. And I've talked about this, and I talk about this on a regular basis. If you don't know what the product is, you are the product. This is true about Google, who doesn't charge you for all of those searches you do. This is true about all of these different AI programs that are offering up AI for free. This is all about Facebook or Instagram or Snapchat or whoever. It doesn't matter who it is. They are gaining something by just having you there on their service. And people think that they freely choose what they see online, but everything we see online is curated by algorithms, and they affect you. These algorithms are geared towards keeping you as a customer. They're geared towards keeping your eyeballs glued to their service. And if you are not recognizing that influence and that manipulation, then there's a problem there. They affect your digital reality, which may not even be real. It's what they're giving you to encourage you to keep coming back. Real digital literacy. It really is about understanding whether we're talking about news feeds, we're talking about search engines, we're talking about social media, how they are all manipulating your engagement. The various games that we play, these free games, and I'll call out Candy Crush. It is addictive, and it's purposefully built to be addictive, to keep you coming back. They have all kinds of different elements in that game alone that encourage you to come back on a daily basis, on a weekly basis, to go through and spend just a few more minutes on their service. It's addictive. But it's purposefully built to be addictive. If you can't explain how content is prioritized on your favorite platform, if you can't understand how they keep drawing you back, if you can't figure out why you keep seeing a lot of different things in one political direction or another, or one particular hobby versus another, you are playing a game where you don't know the rules. And digital literacy is all about understanding that. Then there's the idea that we store everything in the cloud. And frequently we forget, we dismiss who actually controls that data, who has access to it. And we've seen a shift, a long building shift towards subscription-based, cloud-reliant models. And these models mean that most of us don't actually own our own digital content. They're renting us access. They're granting us a little bit of convenience while we give up some of our privacy. Digital literacy means understanding how to maintain control over your own files. It means that you can avoid being reliant upon one specific vendor, being locked in there. It means that, yes, you know how to preserve long-term digital independence. And these are very tricky things. And yes, you may have heard a lot of these things from me in the past, but overall, digital literacy is understanding each of these different things, each of these different applications. And look, you don't need to be a programmer. You don't need to have all of the different coding and automation and deeper tech skills along the way. But you should understand basic automation. You should understand at least a little bit about what scripts are and how to utilize those scripts and understand the different areas of the computer. You should be understanding logical thinking. If you give information to this company and all of a sudden you start seeing other information from another company trying to say, why did you give it to them? And I'm bringing this on a very basic level. Then you've got a problem there. You've lost power over your tech. You need to be thinking about this. You need to maintain the control over everything that you've got instead of the other way around. The ability to critically assess a tool, to tweak it to serve your needs, is a sign of true digital fluency. You need to be able to understand the balance there of what you're giving and what you're getting, where the payoff is, and if you are truly gaining convenience and what the cost is for that convenience. So digital literacy, it isn't about using technology. It's about understanding it, questioning it, and controlling it. Without those deeper skills in play, you are not in the driver's seat of your digital life. You are just a passenger letting the algorithms, the various big social media corporations and everyone else, and yes, convenience, dictate the road ahead. And that's not where we want to be. You want to be in the driver's seat. You want to understand this, and you want to be able to dig deeper to protect yourself in the areas that matter most to you. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Micro Center, home to all kinds of electronics and computer items, has over 20 locations across the country, and it's also available at microcenter.com. This is Benjamin Rockwell of Computer Talk Radio, and I live just a couple of miles away from my local Micro Center, and I've been shopping there for years. From Apple to Windows, they've got what you need. CPUs, got them. Screwdrivers and other tools, yep. Cables, televisions, scanners, projectors, cameras, they have it all. Micro Center is a place which fills your electronic needs. What are you looking for? Media centers, monitors, mice, MP3 players, media, modems, motherboards, memory? Those are just the M's. They aren't regional, but spread across our great land from Virginia to California. Each one is service and repair, in-store clinics, and business services, too. MicroCenter.com is their online store, a place where you can get your regular online ordering needs met. From the hobbyist to the professional, the brand name, or building it yourself, MicroCenter is your resource. Check out MicroCenter.com today. MicroCenter.com.
Amy asked me, what role will artificial intelligence play in our future computing? Amy reached out to me at computertalkradio.com. You can do it as well. Scroll down to where it says contact us today, and I will get back to you with the answers to your computer questions and your technology concerns. Again, computertalkradio.com. Artificial intelligence, what is it going to do for us in the coming years? And artificial intelligence, we have to think about this, all of us. We need to be planning ahead and examining how we will utilize it. And we need to start thinking about it as if it's a sous chef. That sous chef can anticipate that next move in the kitchen, and they take care of the various tasks before the chef actually asks. AI is going through, and it's being used to streamline processes. It is poised to increase in our lives. It's going to become a bigger part of everything that we're doing. And you and I all need to understand where AI is heading. This is going to help us get a sense of how we can harness it in our work, in our private lives, and everywhere else. So I strongly suggest studying what it can do and keeping track of it. First up, automation and machine learning. AI can be utilized to automate repetitive tasks. And anytime we can automate something that we're doing over and over and over and over and over again, anytime we can shift that away from our lives into that automation is going to be good. I've been dealing with robotic process automation, RPA, for a number of years, off and on, and I've automated a number of different things along the way. And I look for ways to have tech save me time, save me energy. And I've talked about this before in the past. And anytime we can do this, it's going to be great. Automation through AI allows us to skim off some of the energy that we're taking for doing that automation. We can tell it to do different things, and it will empower us to move forward and make those repetitive tasks no longer a manual task. And we're going to see that assistants like Siri and Alexa, they're going to become smarter and they're going to be more integrated with our devices. And this is across the board. Everybody is shifting in this direction. Everybody's expending all kinds of different energies into this. We've already seen this with Apple Intelligence. We're seeing this in the coming months. We're going to see Alexa go to a brand new level. Amazon's been talking about this. And as we move in this direction, it's going to allow us to offload some of those different things that, again, are more mundane, and we're going to let the computer do it. There's already discussions about the next level of ChatGPT and it being allowed to automate a number of different interactions we're doing throughout our lives, and it's going to offload our work. Now, we do need to be very careful, and in that, we are going to start to see some concerns with ethics. We're going to see concerns with regulations. We're going to see all kinds of different directions where we may be held back from AI, or we may choose to hold ourselves back with AI. AI has distinct problems with a number of different areas. Privacy is a key issue. And we see this, we start talking about DeepSeek and how they want us to use their AI engine, but they're going to siphon off every bit of data that they can from us. And that's a lot of data. As a matter of fact, they don't even have to rely. And DeepSeek, their end user license agreement, we've talked about this, it basically is set up to not only use any information that it can get from us, but also from other databases where our data exists, and they're going to fold, spindle, mutilate all of that data to leverage it against us. I am concerned about that privacy issue, and that is going to play heavily into how we deal with future computing. There are other issues like bias, which AI, yes, it does have a bias in it. Every time we turn around, somebody's come up with some other proof that AI is misguided and it is going to not always give us the correct information. Sometimes it's biased. Sometimes it's just inaccurate. So we have to be very careful about any of that. We are going to see in future computing the usage of AI in analyzing massive amounts of data sets. And this is going to change a lot about how business operates and how businesses make decisions. We're going to see so many different ways that AI is going to be leveraged both for us, for the businesses, but also against us as consumers. So we need to be very careful about that. We need to be very aware of this. This isn't the big, huge Skynet existential threat that some people call it, but it is something that is going to change enough of our world and how we interoperate between each other, between businesses and ourselves, businesses to businesses, but all of this, it's something we all need to stay well informed on. I want to close out by saying that all of us need to focus on skill building with AI. This is not something we should just sit and ignore. We need to learn how to interact with it. We need to learn how to ask it questions and have it do a lot of different things for us. We need to stay relevant in our careers, and the people who are already working with AI, leveraging AI, and using it to be better at what they do for whatever company they're working for, those are going to be the people who are winning in this game. Just as having that efficient sous chef makes cooking easier, AI is going to continue to make computing more intuitive, more powerful, and it is going to allow us to focus on a number of different areas. We just need to make sure that we all keep it in check as well. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Hey guys, this is Benny Rockwell. Most of us use video cameras nowadays, but what about those old movie films in the back of your closet? Well, let me tell you about Legacy Digital Productions. They specialize in taking your old memories on film, videotape, and slides and digitizing them to DVDs. Imagine Grandpa's old 8mm and 16mm films that are just sitting in a box getting old and fading away. Legacy Digital will clean and recondition those films, capture them digitally frame by frame, and then produce beautiful DVDs of your precious memories on long-lasting archive-quality discs. They don't use a projector, and your films can't be damaged in the process, the best available for families like yours. The final results are gorgeous. What better way to preserve those precious memories for future generations? Call right now, mention my name, Benny Rockwell, and receive a 30% discount on your order. Call toll-free 1-866-2-LEGACY. That's 1-866-2-LEGACY, 1-866-253-4229. And tell them Benny sent you. Your memories are priceless, so call 866-2-LEGACY now.
This is Benjamin Rockwell, and this is where we get down to business. This is where we talk about computers, technology, the workplace, and a lot of related items. And the topic that I want to cover for just a few weeks here is something that is continually prevalent in the IT industry, but around all of business, a matter of us and whether we need to end the quote-unquote work-from-home experiment, which at this point, I will tell you, is no longer an experiment. It is actually something that for many companies, they've realized a lot of success through this. They've realized a lot of the upsides to this. And other companies are struggling because they want control, they want power, they want some level of authoritarianism to be implemented over their minions. Wow, did that go dark really quick? I didn't mean for it to go that dark, but I will say that there is a lot of corporate theater out there that is really, I would say, not portraying the best items for luring us back into the office. I'm not going to call this a lie. I'm not going to say that they are that they're going forward and telling us all kinds of different mistruths to guide us into the office. But I'm going to poke some holes in some of the different things that we've heard over the years. Now, as part of this, I want to address the fact that I've been in IT now for well over 30 years. I've been in the business place. I've been all across business in many different facets of many different industries, all revolving around IT. But I've seen this in small businesses, medium businesses, and large businesses, at least as far as IT. And as we've moved forward, as technology has enabled us to be able to work from home, there are a lot of great things that technology has brought us all the way along through all of this. And yes, there are different reasons why they present that we should go back into the office, even though we've been working from home, many of us, for at least the last 5 years. Now, in my personal case, I did a lot of in-person stuff for years, but then along the way, I did work for a couple of different companies that allowed me some level of remote access to be able to do various things that I needed to do along the way. I was on hand for a variety of different things, not from the office, but simply being at home. Oh, you need me to log in and control this server. Great, I can do this. Oh, yeah, I can see that this problem is happening, and I'd fix it. And this is something that I will tell you that it's the idea that we all must go back into the office, as has been dictated by some of these different companies, even by the government. I'm not sure that that's really the best all the way around. So let's start off with some of the different items that we've heard and my view on them. One of them is how team building happens organically within the office. It's a nice, big, huge wording there. Oh, we need to do this. There is a translation that goes through my mind. It's the idea of we're going to force you into working more hours. You're going to go through, we'll have happy hours and team events and all of this stuff outside of normal hours. Look, I struggle with that. Of course, I struggle with that because I don't like hanging out with a lot of people who may or may not have things in common with me. And yes, okay, so I'm a nerd. I'm a little bit of an oddball, but in reality, all of us are oddballs, and not all of us want to go into some of these team bonding experiences. Just because we're in the same office, we're all breathing the same AC or heating and all of the same air, that doesn't bond us. The best relationships form from mutual respect. They form from actually working with each other and really moving forward. Now, I'm not knocking team builders. I like the idea of team builders so long as it's more of a just casual, let's have fun together. And I will tell you, a lot more of the bonding happens in one-on-one meetings, which don't have to happen in person. We can phone each other. As a matter of fact, we've phoned various coworkers for many years, and we've now got things like Teams chat or Slack DMs, whatever it is, where we can actually talk to each other, even during meetings, and we can exchange, and we can share comments, and we can evaluate what's going on, and we can perhaps say, hey, I missed that. Can you help me understand that? And that's during the middle of these meetings. And actually, I will find that I bond better with those casual conversations that happen alongside of those meetings far more than I actually do with some of the meetings that I've been dragged into over the many years of my career, going, why am I even here? There's a lot to this, and I'm going to continue to unpack some of these over the course of the coming weeks. Look, we're going to be coming up with a lot of different things over the course of the coming years, and it's up to you to decide what you take from this and what you leave behind. But at least understand the side of people on both sides of this conversation. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. Years ago, I found a web hosting company that fit my needs as a computer nerd, as a radio show host, and, well, a normal person. Recently, though, it became clear to me that it was time to upgrade. I had a choice between my old plan and the new one at 7 times the cost. It was that awkward point where I could choose between a sip of water or being dunked in a pool. I searched around, comparing the many options for someone like me. After looking for 3 weeks, there it was, SiteGround. In proper fashion, I tested their customer service, their knowledge, and their care, their willingness to do things the right way. The SiteGround salesman made sure that I didn't overbuy and get a 50-gallon bucket when all I needed was a 1-gallon bucket. The folks at SiteGround know WordPress, Joomla, and more. SiteGround.com, S-I-T-E, ground.com for your web hosting needs. SiteGround. Jason reached out to me with the question, should we genuinely be concerned about China using hardware apps like TikTok and other digital methods to spy on us? And the reality of this is not all that great. It's not all that fun to listen to. I want you to imagine your digital life like a fortress. If you hear whispers that somebody might be digging tunnels under your walls or sneaking through your gates, wouldn't you want to double check those defenses that you have there? The concern over China or any other country spying through technology is much like that. So it may not be so much about paranoia, but being prepared, being vigilant in everything that we're doing. Look, we all need to understand the risks. And to do that, we need to do our research all the way through all of these things. We need to be educating ourselves on how data can be collected and used, from hardware devices to apps. Even though it may be something wonderful, it might be something exciting. I'm thinking of the DJI drones. Look, those are beautiful, but what of all of the video that they're taking? What about all of the motions that they're doing? Are they using that in nefarious ways to take pictures of our country, of geo-mapping all of everywhere that they can go? Look, that might be a stretch because a lot of that data isn't going to be going over to China. But some of it could be. Some of it may be. Some of it probably is. But we don't know how much is going. We don't know what is going along the way. And then we start looking at apps like TikTok, and TikTok is just like Facebook in that they're gathering as much information as they can through our smartphones, through our various computers that we're using and so forth. Look, you do need to secure your devices, and that means using reputable antivirus software. That means enabling firewalls. You need to be making sure that everything is current and up to date. But you also need to be monitoring the permissions that you give to all of the different items you deal with. On a regular basis, you should be checking which apps have access to your camera, your microphone, your location, and your data. And if something seems fishy, you probably need to pull that back. You probably need to think about if you even want to have that app any longer. So governments and cybersecurity experts are constantly evaluating the risks associated with what we're doing and what the foreign entities out there may wish to do. And I think we need to be following the various credible news sources to stay updated on the latest advisories. If our country wants to stop the sale of DJI drones here or stop TikTok, maybe when they're presenting it, maybe there's something behind that. Look, you need to strengthen your digital fortress. You don't just defend against potential threats here. You also gain some level of a peace of mind. A well-guarded castle reassures its residents, and your secure tech habits are going to make your life, your digital life, safer, no matter who might be watching. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. We'll catch you next week.
Let me tell you about The Radio Factory, an exciting new venue for talk radio. It's the internet, the wave of the present. My name is Benjamin Rockwell, and I'm the host of a syndicated radio program, Computer Talk Radio, so I know the internet is here and now. Many of the hosts at theradiofactory.com have their own podcasts or radio shows across the country, but many people like the comfort of listening to their own special radio show at a specific time and day, much like we watch live television. The internet, as you're probably aware, is a powerful tool that allows The Radio Factory to deliver unique programming with far more variety than the windbags who are simply about contriving up viewpoints to get you riled up. Additionally, you'll find that many of the programs are shorter, giving more information in less time. Stick with theradiofactory.com and see how it evolves to keep you entertained, interested, informed, and above all, intelligent. After all, the Radio Factory motto is building your intelligence one talk show at a time. Theradiofactory.com.